We're looking now tonight at the ministry in Corinth, Acts chapter 18, please. Acts 18, we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 11. Why don't we go ahead and begin reading verses 1 through 11, just start right into the text tonight. After these things, he left Athens and went to Corinth. Here talking about Paul. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working, for by trade they were tent makers. And he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath and trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. But when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Peter began devoting himself completely to the word, solemnly testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. But when they resisted and blasphemed, he shook out his garments, and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I am clean. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." Then he left them and went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God whose home was next to the synagogue. Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, believed in the Lord with all his household, and many of the Corinthians, when they heard, were believing and being baptized. And the Lord said to Paul in a night vision, "Do not be afraid any longer, but go on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you. And no man will attack you in order to harm you, for I have many people in this city." And he settled there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. Now, we're not going to get through all 11 verses, hence the part one to the message tonight, but we are going to be looking at several verses here. Now, remember, the missionaries are now moving from Athens to Corinth. And we're going to show you that map a little more next week. I'll have the everything set up for that, and I will show you that map, and we'll follow it through again because we're going to need to review a little bit next week, anyhow, from the message tonight. So we'll go ahead and do that next week. So anyhow, they move from Athens to Corinth now, and Corinth was located on the isthmus, or the land bridge between Attica. Attica is the area around Athens, and the Greek Peloponnesus, or the peninsula to the south. It had controlling access to two seas, so it's a significant city. It was a cosmopolitan city. They had the Aegean and the Ionian, and it was close to the sea and only about 50 miles from Athens. So we're looking at a very significant city. Toussaint comments that Athens was noted for its culture and learning, Corinth for its commerce and profligacy, immorality. It was very well known. Corinth was the capital of the province of Achaia. It was a Roman colony, and because of its location, was a tremendous commercial center and was a tremendously prosperous city that also added to all of the sin. And the sin was part of it being prosperous with the prostitutes. The city was served by two ports on the opposite sides of the four-mile-wide neck of land. There was a Lycaeum on the northwest and Centuria on the southwest. Corinth was noted for its pagan temple of Aphrodite. Aphrodite name is also known as what? Aphrodite or one of the planets, Venus. The idolatrous worship of this goddess included in its rites immorality. Hence, thousands of prostitutes were there. The temple had, in fact, 1,000 prostitutes. Isn't that amazing? Immorality was so inculcated into the practice of that city, they had 1,000 temple prostitutes. The Greek word Corinthiazomai, was used by Aristophanes at an earlier time, referring to those who were sexually immoral. In other words, they lived like a Corinthian. Because of the immorality of this city, a proverb of this time reads, "Not for every man is a voyage to Corinth." Fruchtenbaum also mentions that the ancients also called debauchery the Corinthian sickness. Isn't that interesting? The expression a Corinthian girl, first introduced by Plato, meant that a woman was a prostitute. So it was very well known for its perversion, the city was. So it's no wonder the church at Corinth also had problems. There was temptation galore around them, and many Christians fell into that. So we see, first of all, Paul's companions in Corinth in verses 1 through 3. Paul's companions in Corinth, verses 1 through 3. Notice, first of all, Paul's coming to Corinth in verse 1. Notice, after these things, he left Athens and went to Corinth. Now, Dr. Thomas Constable gives us the situation that Paul finds himself in at Corinth. He writes, Silas and Timothy had evidently rejoined Paul in Athens, 1 Thessalonians 3:1. Before leaving Athens, Paul sent Timothy back to Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 3:2, and Silas went to somewhere in Macedonia. In this book, chapter 18, verse 5, Perhaps Philippi. Paul arrived in Corinth without these fellow missionaries, and they joined him in Corinth later. Chapter 18 and verse 5 and 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 6. So Paul arrives in Corinth alone. Now think about what he's been through. Okay? Things didn't go real well in Thessalonica, and then some of the Thessalonian Jews pursued him and continued to want to rabble-rouse and cause trouble. So things didn't go the way he expected. All right, here's God, says, this vision, come over to Macedonia, and, you know, we have sometimes a romantic view of missions and a romantic view of the ministry. Paul understood that this was not a bed of roses for him. And no doubt as Paul comes into Corinth, he's discouraged. God had sent him on this missionary journey, although it didn't work out quite the way he expected. And I don't know exactly what he expected, but I'm sure he expected probably more success than what he had. His message was not generally well received, particularly by the Jews. They were the worst of it, his own people. Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, and Athens were all tremendously difficult ministries. He didn't ever have it easy at any of those places and say, well, he could kind of ease in and everybody likes him and then he walks out again. Didn't happen that way. Usually he was escaping. Didn't just walk out nicely in a lot of these places. And even in Athens, you know, maybe he walked out, but, you know, he was met with kind of mixed emotions and not a lot of huge response to the message. And so as he comes into Corinth, he also has to work now to make ends meet. How would that make you feel? You know, he is a missionary. He wants to do the ministry full time. By the way, I've been there. I understand that. I had times in my ministry where I worked a full-time job. And, you know, you say to yourself, I wish I didn't have to do this. I wish I could do this full time. I wish I could study full time. I wish I could give myself to the ministry. I wish I could. And I'm sure Paul had that, you know, Paul's saying, Lord, if it's possible, if you, Lord, you know, I want to be able to dedicate myself to the ministry here at Corinth. But anyhow, God had other plans for him. And by the way, they were helpful plans. So Paul's emotions, how were Paul's? Do we have any indication of Paul's emotions anywhere in Scripture? Yes, we do. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, please. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. What was it like for Paul? What were his emotions like at this present time? 1 Corinthians chapter 2, we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 5. And when I came to you, brethren, I did not come with superiority of speech or of wisdom, proclaiming to you the testimony of God. For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. Notice that? And my message and my preaching were not in persuasive words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith would not rest on the wisdom of men, but on the power of God. Paul's weakness, his fear, his much trembling, not only was caused by the fact that Paul was alone as he came to Corinth, but also because, no doubt, of apprehension concerning what trials would be in store for him now in Corinth. I've had a hard time everywhere else. I wonder what's going to happen now. I mean, he's been beaten up. Some of his war wounds may not have been completely healed at this time. This was not easy. And by the way, we find God at the end of the passage. We will not get there tonight, but God intervenes and has to encourage Paul in a vision. Paul, it's okay. Everything's going to be all right. And so he ends up staying there a significant amount of time to minister to the Corinthians. But not only all of this, but now Paul is coming alone to a city that is notoriously steeped in immorality. See, all of these things, I'm sure, are getting him down. This was difficult. And we see why it was so important for Paul to take others with him on his missionary team. You know, I think it's important, if possible, that missionaries go with other people. I think when you are in a remote place ministering, it can be very difficult. It's difficult if you have a team. But even as church planters, I think in years past, we've made a mistake. And what we should have done instead of planting a church is we should be transplanting churches. In other words, taking a team of believers, maybe someone with the music, someone with, you know, and taking a team of believers, someone who's going to be the pastor, maybe someone to work with the youth, if someone wants to do that, taking that team and sending them out to an area to plant, or if you want to call it, transplant the church, okay? Transplanting is like taking a part of the plant and cutting it off and letting it grow in another place. And that's kind of what you're doing. You're transplanting the church rather than just taking a seed and throwing it into the ground and having one man do everything, you know. So it was important for Paul to have others on the missionary team. But notice, as he comes into Corinth, he doesn't have those people. Uh-oh. Doesn't have the encouragement. Doesn't have someone to come up and say, Paul, everything's going to be fine. You know, God has been with us this far. Don't worry about it. Silas to come up, you know, put his arm around Paul and say, it's all right, man. Everything's fine. Or I'm praying for you. Or why don't we stop and pray together? Why don't all of us come together? We're all going to see, also going to see what a blessing it was to have the fellowship of Aquila and Priscilla in this passage too. So not only a team, and I think it's important, but also Aquila and Priscilla. Folks, understand something. We need fellowship. Did Paul need fellowship? Yeah. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? If Paul needed biblical fellowship, do we? Are we better than Paul? Are we more mature than Paul? Hardly. I can't compare myself to the Apostle Paul, not even close. But Paul needed other Christians. We find places in Scripture where he says he looks forward to fellowshipping with other Christians. We need that. And by the way, I think we need a time together more than just boy, the weather's nice, isn't it? Or boy, the weather's cold. Or boy, the weather's, or what'd you have to eat last night? I think there needs to be a time when we come together and talk about Christ and our relationship with Christ. And maybe our concerns and our love for the Lord. And I mean, Paul needed that. Paul had a difficult time, and that missionary team, those co-workers, meant the world to him. So much so that when he's alone now, it became difficult. But God provided someone else, didn't he? Aquila and Priscilla. Biblical fellowship is necessary, brethren, as we serve the Lord. And we see that here. Notice now, moving into verse 2. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them. By the way, we know that at this time there was a church in Rome. Aquila and Priscilla, did they come from that church in Rome? Seems to have. Some people have said maybe they weren't saved yet. As you look at this, you know, maybe they got saved under the Apostle Paul's ministry. I don't know. It seems as though they have been saved previously. That this was not under the Apostle Paul's ministry in Corinth that they were suddenly saved. I don't think so from what I'm looking at here. So again, go back to verse 2. He found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, by the way. That is an area in what is today the country of Turkey. Having recently come from Italy with his wife, Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. Now, the couple mentioned here, Aquila and Priscilla, is mentioned 6 times in the New Testament. Although the text does not say, again, as I said before, it seems as though these two were already believers before Paul came to Corinth. So they were believers who had moved from Rome, and as I said before, a church already was at Rome. Romans chapter 1, verses 7 and 8 talks about that. Now, how did Paul find them? The text says he found them. Now, the text indicates to us in verse 3 that they were both tent makers. Jews who had the same profession often belonged to the same guild. We might think of the guild as a union, okay? For lack of a better term, maybe not quite the same, but a guild is kind of like a union. So Jews that had the same profession would often belong to this same guild. And Priscilla is also called Prisca in the New Testament. Kind of how we use a name and kind of a nickname type thing. She seems to be the more prominent of the two, because many times it's not Aquila and Priscilla, it's what? Priscilla and Aquila, just the opposite. Kind of unusual. Perhaps she had a noble family background of some type. Her name usually appears first within the biblical text. And so she and her husband probably met Paul at one of these guilds or something, but they had the same profession. So you run into each other at different events, different things. And so they became quick friends, no doubt. But how did Paul, Aquila and Priscilla get there? It says because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And this edict was issued in AD 49. The Roman historian Suetonius speaks of this action. He says it was done, quote, because the Jews at Rome caused continuous disturbances at the instigation of Crestus. He expelled them from the city. Crestus. We don't know who Crestus is, but many people feel that this is probably a misspelling of the name, Greek name, Christos. What is Christos? Christ. Christ. It's the Greek word for Christ. It seems as though he thought that Crestus, was a rebel leader in Rome that was creating riots. And so, not understanding what was going on, he decided to the Claudius decided to kick out the entire Jewish community. So he didn't understand. And here this historian mentions him as Crestas because he was somewhat removed from this historical situation. In fact, remember, Suetonius was born AD 69 and he wrote some years after the event. So historians sometimes get the stuff mixed up, and I think Suetonius did. So I think what he's talking about here is not some guy named Crestus, but he's talking about Christ. They felt that he was maybe some kind of rebel leader, and so they rebel leader with the Jews, and so they kicked all the Jews out of Rome. And this is how Aquila and Priscilla ended up here. Isn't it interesting how God uses situations that may seem to us to be horrible and rotten for his glory? How do you think Aquila and Priscilla felt to be kicked out? And they're thinking, great, Lord, what, you know, we're serving you here in Rome. Boy, we could do a lot of good here. Why do we have to go to Corinth? Why are we going to Corinth, Lord? I don't know if they said that. I doubt if they did, but some of us would. Lord, why are you moving me? I don't want to be moved. Some years ago, Becky and I were desiring to move south after I had my heart surgery. South was nice with the weather and that kind of thing. We were thinking about North Carolina. Lord, it sure would be nice. At the time, I was thinking about going full-time with Baptist Equipping Nationals. I'm glad I did not. God had a purpose in all of that. They were going to make me dean of the school in Egypt at the time. They offered me that position, and I prayed about it and sought the Lord's will, and it wasn't right. Couldn't do it. I'm glad it didn't work out because some things have gone a little differently with the organization since Dr. Nuttall is gone, and so it has been a little different than it used to be at one time. It doesn't make me real comfortable with some of the things. So, that was my point I was making here with that. Isn't that terrible? There I am again. We thought we were going down south. We kind of, thought, Lord, this would be great. And guess what happened? God led us north, led us up to Canada for 4.5 years. So God has a sense of humor, I think. So sometimes he leads differently than what we expect or what we know. And then because of health, I had to come back to the United States because they would have pulled my social insurance in Canada and I wouldn't have had, would have to pay out of pocket or pay for my own insurance there. So God led us here. Here's where we've been ever since, here in Connecticut. What a beautiful state it is. And so we're glad to be here. Glad God has led us here. And by the way, it is warmer than Canada here. It did seem an awful lot warmer when we moved at the time. You may think, oh, it's cold in the winter. I hear people say that. You got no idea. Just go north for a little while, and it's a lot colder there. Even into Maine, you go into Maine, it's a lot colder there than it is here. Some of you that have been to the NRBFC conferences and they go north into Maine for the fall, you go, man, it's cold up here. Yeah, it's even colder in New Brunswick. Okay, you go even a little further than that. So, it gets pretty cold. But, God leads us different ways. And sometimes, and I don't know what Aquila and Priscilla thought, as I said. I don't know. But God led them through a very difficult situation. They were kicked out of Rome, falsely accused, the Christians there, kicked them out. Now, Jews apparently went back later, okay? So it wasn't permanently. But they did go back later. But for the time, they were out. So God led them, and God leads us all differently. Notice verse 3, enough said. Verse 3, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working for by trade they were tent makers. How wonderful. God provided for Paul at this point. He came in alone, but he wasn't alone. There were other brethren there. He was beaten up from the persecution. He was lonely. And here's a couple who were both believers and in the same profession. What better situation could he get? And they also invited Paul to stay with them and work side by side with them. Can't beat that. How God provided for hurting Paul at this point. Isn't that amazing? And you know, he does the same thing for us. When we're going through difficult times, God provides situations for us to comfort us, to help us. He provides friends and brothers and sisters in Christ to encourage us when we're going through hurtful times, and in order to be a help to us. God provided for Paul. What a wonderful conversations that these three must have had. Think about Paul and Aquila and Priscilla sitting down in the evening and chatting and talking about the Lord. And one can only imagine what kind of conversation they must have had. It would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in that day. Notice also it says they were what? Tent makers. And when we think of tent makers, that's all we think of. They made these pup tents or something, you know. They made all these tents and they wove them together and that's all they made. They just made tents. But literally, the Greek word here means leather workers. So probably they did a lot more than just tents here. Tents were important, but there were other things. And of course, you'd probably want to expand your horizons a bit with a business. So it includes more than just making tents, maybe saddles and other things, and who knows, all sorts of things that were made from leather. But they were leather makers, and one of the great things made with leather would have been a tent with animal skins. Notice number two, we find Paul's ministry now in Corinth in verses 4 through 11. First of all, Jewish ministry. In verses 4 and 5, notice what it says in verse 4. And he was reasoning, there we go again, that kind of idea, in the synagogue every Sabbath and trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. In the synagogue every Sabbath. So once again, Paul was using his methodology of to the Jew first. To the Jew first. There in the synagogue, he reasoned with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks. And it was a weekly occurrence. He would work during the work week, but yet he would take some time on the Sabbath, as other Jews did, to go worship the Lord. And there he would confront people on the Sabbath and converse with them and try to see that they would come to know the Lord. But Paul was not doing this ministry full time. He was a tent maker. And we use that term now very commonly. Well, the pastor does tent making. We don't literally mean that the pastor makes tents. But what it means is the pastor's got to get a job. Okay, he does tent making too. And here we find that Paul was not doing this full time. And I understand it can be a drain. Imagine working all the time, working your fingers to the bone. It's great to have fellowship with other believers around you as you work, but boy, oh boy, you know, it gets tiring, and now you've got to reason with other people in the synagogue on the Sabbath, and I'm sure Paul was exhausted many times at the end of his day. But when Silas, verse 5, Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, wow, that must have been a relief, eh? 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 6 through 10. Let's look at that for a minute so we can see the background here. So we do have other accounts of the background of some of this. So Acts is not the only thing that we have. We do have some cross references. So again, let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, beginning with verse 6. But now that Timothy has come to us from you, and has brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us, just as we also long to see you. For this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. For now we really live if you stand firm in the Lord. For what thanks can we render to God for you in return for all the joy with which we rejoice before our God on your account, as we night and day keep praying most earnestly that we may see your face and may complete what is lacking in your faith. So here we find the background as the men brought good news about the Thessalonian church. Paul would be comforted, he would be overjoyed, because the stress of that was on him too. Not just being beaten up, not just being persecuted, not just being alone, but also now he learned that things were going better. It wasn't a complete failure. Because I'm sure he wondered about that. You know, was it a complete failure that I was there? Have they destroyed all that I laid the foundation? But here, after hearing this, Paul was comforted and overjoyed. And more good news, Silas and Timothy also brought money to Paul from the Philippian church. And we read that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 9, Philippians chapter 4, verses 14 through 17. The men also related some slander that was going around about Paul, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. And they presented some questions that the Thessalonians had concerning the return of Christ. And this prompted Paul at this time to write the epistle to the Thessalonian church, 1 Thessalonians. So when was it written? There you go. See, it fits hand in glove here with the history. But notice Paul finds some real encouragement now through these things, through the men coming, through and now he has some income. He has some finances. He doesn't have to work full-time anymore. And so the text says Paul began devoting himself completely to the word. Boy, that must have been a real encouragement too. So because of the financial support brought by Silas and Timothy from the Philippians, this allowed Paul to devote himself to ministry full-time. Silas and Timothy joined him in ministry here, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 19. So here is more encouragement. And notice at the end, and we will end with verse 5 this week and pick it up again next week. But when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul began devoting himself completely to the word. Notice, solemnly testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. Again, the focus here at first was on Jewish evangelism. And the message was very similar as at all times with the Jewish people. Jesus is your Messiah. The one you've been looking for, the one Old Testament prophets foretold, this is he. You rejected him. Same message. Here he is giving it to the Jews once again. And next week we will continue on talking about Paul's ministry in this city of Corinth. Folks, don't be discouraged. Paul could have been discouraged and given up, but he didn't. I'm glad he didn't. But he needed fellowship. We need one another, brethren. We need each other. We need to pray for one another. And if there's an issue, if there's a problem, maybe we need to talk to one another and fellowship with each other. Brother, sister in Christ, could you pray with me? God's dealing with something in my life, and I've been down about this. Now, we need to be honest with one another. This is difficult for me. Would you pray for me? This is difficult for me. Could I talk with you for a few minutes? You know, even sometimes if it's just a phone call, we need to communicate with one another, fellowship with each other, encourage each other. Paul needed it. We do too. We do too. Let's close in a word of prayer.